Go ahead and get started. Good afternoon, everybody. This is the May 16th, 2024 afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Good afternoon, Rebecca. Please call the roll.
Ryan.
Here.
Gonzalez.
Here.
Maps.
Here.
Rubio.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. And I assume we're working on the echo. Great. Thank you. We'll now hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Oh,
that's efficient.
We're awake now.
Welcome to the Portland City Council. To testify before council in person or virtually, you must sign up in advance on the council agenda at www.portland.gov/council/agenda. Information on engaging with city council can be found on the council clerk's webpage. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during city council meetings. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. A timer will indicate when your time is done. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If you cause a disruption, a warning will be given. Further disruption will result in ejection from the meeting. Anyone who fails to leave once ejected is subject to arrest for trespass. Additionally, council may take a short recess and reconvene virtually. Your testimony today should address the matter being considered. When testifying, state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you're representing an organization, please identify it. For testifiers joining virtually, please unmute yourself once the council clerk calls your name. Thank you.
All right, thank you. First item is 392. It's the first reading of a non-emergency ordinance.
Authorize competitive solicitation for Portland Clean Energy Community Benefits Fund Climate Investment Plan Strategic Program 3, Clean Energy Improvements in Single Family Homes, not to exceed $140 million over 5 years.
Commissioner Rubio.
Thank you, Mayor. Colleagues, in November of 2018, our community said yes to the Portland Clean Energy Community Benefits Initiative on a nearly 2-to-1 basis. Portlanders want to see bold climate action that also addresses the critical needs of our community. And as all of you heard earlier this week, PSF has implemented multiple rounds of community responsive grants, launching the Cooling Portland program, and most recently began implementing the climate investment plan that this council unanimously adopted in September of 2023. This ordinance before us today is just another one of the many actions that we've taken as we implement the climate investment plan. And this one focuses on the places that we spend so much of our time in our homes. While this program is focused on single family homes, rest assured that we also have substantial clean energy programs for our apartments and multifamily buildings. Now, strategic program number 3, which is clean energy improvements in single family homes, is not going to grab the headlines for its title, but it showcases the best of what PSF can offer. It will create meaningful improvements to over 3,100 homes that not only allow for our community members to be more comfortable, but also significantly reduce greenhouse gas emissions, reduce utility bills, improve indoor air quality, and address critical life, health, and safety improvements for households across our city. In addition to all of this, this program will help Portlanders leverage significant federal resources available from the Inflation Reduction Act. So I'm eager to get this program up and running and look forward to hearing from staff and our invited speakers today. With that, I would like to introduce Interim BPS Director Eric Engstrom.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good afternoon, Mayor and Council. For the record, my name is Eric Engstrom. I'm here as Interim Director of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I've been in this room and before council quite a few times, but this is my first time wearing that hat. Thank you. Today, we're asking you to authorize the Portland Clean Energy Fund program to release RFPs to seek program administrators for their strategic program number 3, which, as the commissioner just described, is about clean energy improvements for single family homes. After that, the program would work with procurement to follow their standard process and procedures to get that request for proposals out. As Commissioner Rubio shared, this strategic program was included in the climate investment plan, which was approved by council last year. And with that, it's my honor to turn it over to PSF program manager, Sam Barrasso.
Okay,
Thank you all. Good afternoon, commissioners. It's good to be in front of you all again this week. For the record, my name is Sam Barossa. I'm the program manager for the Portland Clean Energy Community Benefits Fund. All right, if you all bear with me for just a second, I am going to queue up our presentation deck. There we go. Okay. Okay, so this afternoon here, we're going to walk you through, and I'm going to try to keep it brief because you've heard this last week. You're going to hear this consistently as we come before you all and we bring together programs around the climate investment plan that we're moving forward to implement. We're going to quickly give you all an overview before we turn it over to my colleagues and the team to describe the programs in more depth. So we'll walk through the climate investment plan. Then we'll pivot and turn to strategic program 3 and dive in more specifically around the need, the opportunity, the program description, the specific structure, roles, as well as accountability that's built into the program that we'll go out for as part of the RFP. We'll dive into some of the examples of the projects, the measures, the costs, as well as the outcomes and goals before we invite up our 3 invited speakers and then turn it to you all for questions. So first, again, we're going to continue coming before you all just to show as we're implementing the climate investment plan, how we're adapting the implementation to stakeholder feedback. And this is a program that has had a tremendous amount of stakeholder feedback as part that began in the development of the plan itself. And then as soon as we executed the plan, we immediately brought together a range of stakeholder groups, which Chris will talk about shortly. You'll see how this is really squarely in the pocket around how we see our investments in climate justice, and you'll get to see how we're thinking about measuring and tracking the potential and outcomes of these investments. And lastly, you'll just get a flavor of how this program will help this community, Portland, leverage the tremendous amount of Inflation Reduction Act resources that are out there and being dispersed through our Department of Energy, Energy Trust of Oregon, and many other partners. All right. So again, a tremendous amount of input went into the climate investment plan. And in particular, we brought together a range of technical experts around a roundtable focused on this particular sector area. So there was a really strong roadmap within the plan itself that built out this program that's leading to the RFP that we plan to go out for here shortly. As we step back and think about the need, you're going to hear, there's a broad need, and we've showed this line to you many times, so I'm not going to go through it in detail, but collectively, when we think about our overall climate goals, this program is going to be roughly targeting about 600 homes a year. And we know that we need to get to ultimately the scale of probably 2,000 to 3,000 homes a year in order to hit our overall goals. And so we know this is a key part to that, and this is a start, and you'll see how we're building that out. This program falls within that 63% of our overall allocation of funding that's going towards renewable energy and energy efficiency within the plan itself. But it does touch on some of the others, notably the climate jobs, workforce, and contractor development, as that's a core component of this program. You'll hear more about. And then lastly, this is just a reminder. We talked about this earlier this week, but as part of the plan, we implemented really 3 primary pathways as we move the resources through grants, which you'll get to hear more about later this summer, through requests for proposals, where we are leveraging our procurement infrastructure. And so this is that first step in that process, and then through interagency agreements as well as intergovernmental agreements. So we're here before you around this program this month. Next month, you'll see us come before you all to talk about our capacity building program and contractors we seek to bring on board, as well as our electric bike access and support program. And then we'll come back to you all in July and August to talk about our community responsive grants. So just to give you a sense of how many more times we'll be in front of you this summer. All right. So with that, I think you've heard enough from me this week. I'd like to turn things over to my colleague, Chris Gruba, who's the Clean Energy Project Manager within the program. And notably, Chris came to us from the Housing Bureau, but Chris has a long history in energy efficiency work, both as the previous president of the Home Performance Guild, but also as one of the core contractors that participated in Clean Energy Works Portland, which ultimately became Clean Energy Works Oregon, which then became Inhabit, and was one of the core precursors to PSEF that led a lot of the groundwork that that fomented and helped build the idea of PSEF up later on. So I'm excited to turn things over to Chris, given just the depth of expertise and experience she brings to this work, and have you work through the rest of this presentation.
Chris. Great. Thank you, Sam. Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. It's a pleasure to be here. For the record, my name is Chris Gruba. I'm a clean energy project manager with PSEF. So as Sam mentioned, I come to this, my work with PSEF, with a 15-year career providing home energy retrofits. So I've seen a lot of old homes in the city of Portland, and I know that there's a lot of energy to be saved out there. Next slide, please. Clean energy improvements in single family homes. It's better than Strategic Program 3 as a name, actually. We'll invest $140 million in home energy upgrades for 3,100 income qualifying households over 5 years, reducing greenhouse gas emissions, decreasing energy usage and utility bills, and improving housing stability by reducing the risk of displacement. The work performed in this program will also increase the comfort, health, and resiliency of the households served. Next slide, please. The need is significant. 37% of all homeowners and nearly half of all renters are considered housing cost burdened. That means they spend over 30% of their income on housing-related expenses. Now, a significant subset of this group spends well over 50% of their income on household-related expenses. One-third of all homeowners in the city of Portland, 42,000 is an estimate I've seen, are considered low income, with incomes at or below 80% of area median income. This program will not only lower energy bills and improve the comfort, resiliency, and housing stability of low-income households in Portland, it will also provide an opportunity to serve renters and moderate-income households. The program will also provide the opportunity, as you've heard, to leverage additional funding. The IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act funds, we expect to see those in early 2025, and we'll be working closely with that program. Also utility incentives and other state rebates. The program will also provide the opportunity to develop a workforce with the advanced technical skills needed to transform the energy efficiency of Portland's housing market. Next slide, please. My notes together here. So what's this gonna look like? How is this program gonna work? Each home will receive a thorough assessment by a Building Performance Institute certified contractor. The contractor will come into the home. They'll put a blower door on to test for air leakage in the house. They'll use a duct blaster to test for duct leakage. They will calculate, they'll do a heat load calculation to make sure that the mechanical equipment that's installed in the house is actually sized properly, which is not always the case. They will also measure ventilation in the home to make sure that, that the home is left with healthy indoor air quality. Each home will receive energy modeling to determine which upgrades will provide the best greenhouse gas reductions and also the best utility savings. So it'll be data driven. Life, health, and safety concerns in the home will be identified to ensure occupant well-being. These issues will be addressed as part of, or at least partially addressed. We're not going to be able to meet the full need, but at least partially addressed by the 30% of the project budget that is allowed for deferred maintenance. Now, this is a really important point about our program. Lack of funding for deferred maintenance in most energy efficiency programs throughout the nation has presented a significant barrier to participation in those programs by low and moderate income households. We did not want to perpetuate that problem. Next slide, please. SP3 will fund deep energy and renewable energy improvements in low-income owner-occupied homes at the highest investment level. The deep energy retrofits address the whole home, from the shell or the envelope of the house, where we air seal and insulate, to the mechanical systems, high efficiency heating and cooling systems, heat pump water heaters. Some homes will have solar. Renters and moderate income households will receive lower investment levels. These projects will focus on high impact measures. Some examples of that include ductless heat pumps, attic insulation, heat pump water heaters again. These are the measures with the greatest utility bill savings and the greatest greenhouse gas reductions. We will also fund energy upgrades in in-home childcare homes as well as congregate living homes. Next slide. As mentioned, to administer this program, we will issue RFPs seeking high caliber, experienced administrators for each of the following roles. Next slide. The central program administrator will provide overall program coordination, reporting, and management. They'll be responsible for marketing and outreach, customer application and qualification, as well as contractor management and support. They will also oversee the SP3 workforce training and job retention programs. The next role, next slide. Customer navigator. We'll seek a provider to administer a customer navigator program, which will provide culturally specific customer engagement and support. They will provide occupant education, in some cases, translation services. The goal is to provide a seamless and positive experience for program customers. Next slide. Finally, we'll seek a third-party quality assurance provider. Each home energy retrofit, that will oversee each of the home energy retrofits to ensure occupant safety, as well as to ensure that the projected greenhouse gas emissions reductions are actually being achieved. Next slide. In summary, the program will improve housing stability and climate resiliency for low-income households, as well as for renters and moderate income households. Outcomes realized from this program will include 3,100 single family households will receive energy efficiency and renewable upgrades, including 50 in-home childcare and congregate living homes. Low-income owner-occupied households will save an average of 30% on utility bills, moderate income households, 20%, and renters around 15%. In some cases, that'll be quite a bit higher, as renter is a need, is great. In the end, the program will reduce 120 to 150 metric tons of lifetime CO2 equivalent emissions. That's like removing 30 to 36,000 gas-powered cars from the road for a year. Thank you, and that concludes my testimony, and I'll hand it back to Sam.
Thank you. So the ask before you all, and I suppose I should have been more clear about this from the outset, is that we're going to be seeking for you all to authorize us to go out for competitive solicitations. And so we expect to come back before you all on the other side of the RFP as you get the report on who ultimately lands these contracts. And so we expect to come before you all for the second reading on May 22nd. And so with that, I'd like to turn it over to our invited speakers before bringing it to you all for questions. But I'm going to call forth our three invited speakers, and I'm going to hop over this way to bring them over to my right. Faith Graham, Principal Director for the West Coast Strategy and Development at Elevate Energy and a PCF committee member. Jason Benfeet, General Manager of Solar Energy at Neil Kelly. And then Tim Miller, Director at Oregon Business for Climate.
Bless you. Start with you, Matt. Great. Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. Thank you for this opportunity to testify. For the record, my name is Faith Graham. As Sam stated, I'm a principal director at Elevate Energy, and I'm also a PCF committee member. I'm really happy to be here. I'm a longtime resident of Portland, and I've spent my entire career working on housing stability and climate action. And I also am an original startup member of Clean Energy Works Oregon, where I met Tim, who will also be testifying in front of you all. So Elevate is a national nonprofit that's been working for nearly 25 years on this issue to ensure that everyone has access to clean and affordable heat, cooling, power, and water in their homes and communities. We are centering equity in the climate conversation. I really only have two very succinct points that I want to underscore by being here and testifying in front of you. That is the importance of the program, which I think staff did an awesome job of detailing for you, but I'll just underscore that. And also, I want to stress the reasonableness of the program design, according to all of the programs that we are implementing across the nation. So if I can stress briefly and succinctly the importance of this program really to address climate justice and the city's goal of getting to net zero, I think this program artfully addresses a multitude of needs. Some of them are very specific and obvious, like housing stability, energy security, job creation, health and safety. And then I think the other one that has been stressed in the presentation today, but one that I would underscore based on what I've been working on for the last year, is really creating an established channel for additional funds in the very large historic investment that the federal government is making into this particular market sector. And what we're finding around the nation, including here in Oregon, is the need to develop pipeline for those funds. And this is an awesome opportunity for us to do that. So I just wanted to highlight that as an opportunity for us. And then I will say with my second point, which is just the reasonableness of the program design, it really has those three core components that we think at Elevate is best in class and what we try to implement everywhere, which is having a program administrator. It's very standard in utility type programs to have that kind of overarching program administrator. The really important key point of having community navigators so that you actually get access to those people that you want to participate in this program, and then quality assurance clearly to demonstrate that this program is effective. As far as the level of investment, it's very on point with what we're seeing in other places as well. This often takes $50,000 per home to really do that electrification and energy efficiency upgrades. And that is often not including the health and safety measures, or if there's there has been deferred maintenance that needs to be addressed prior to making these measures. So it is, it's generous for sure, but it's not overly generous. The need is greater than what's there. So again, thank you so much. I'm so happy to take questions when we get there if you have any, but that is what I wanted to share with you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. For the record, my name is Jason Benfitt. It's working? Okay. And I'm the general manager of the Home Performance and Solar Division at Neil Kelly. And I'm here to testify on behalf of Neil Kelly. You know, the company itself has been around since 1947. Neil himself, the founder, actually purchased a insulation and window company. And we've been through many variations of different funding programs and policies through the 70s, Jimmy Carter, the WAP, that definitely created a huge boom in the business, especially for our company. We had expanded our weatherization efforts to doing solar thermal in the 70s as well. And what we've seen between that and 2010 was a huge boom in business and then a steep cliff. And that cliff happens when the funds run out and people lose their jobs and we lose all the momentum that we gained over those times. And this is what makes it different. PSEF is definitely something I feel that is gonna be, yes, we have a 5-year budget, but it's something that can extend beyond that. And it's gonna provide a longer runway for companies and businesses to be able to build up the workforce, develop the skills that they need to do this work, and to have that be sustainable. And it just starts with this. I think over time, you're gonna see a lot of other homeowners adopt doing weatherization efforts in their home, not just low income. So you're giving the platform for businesses to really have a great opportunity to be able to grow and expand and create jobs. And you know, obviously the benefits are so great with low income families. And you know, I've personally been in the trenches or in the home performance world, the attics and crawl spaces. I got my start 14 years ago. I had a grant to get a BPI certified to be a building analyst and did energy audits and communicated with homeowners, made recommendations. And, you know, you see a lot of different things, especially with these homes. They've been neglected for a long time. It's not just going in there and blowing insulation. It's a lot more than that. You know, we have to focus on making the home airtight. There's a lot of different energy saving measures, even just to do insulation in the attic. We have knob and tube, so there's deferred maintenance, things that we have to take care of. That's why that $50,000 amount is reasonable and something that I see that is doable to be able to get these homes to be more efficient. So, you know, I think that over time, you're going to see, especially the ramp up. You know, we don't really have the skilled labor to do these jobs right now. This is going to take a collaborative effort. We're going to have to build our team, our crews, vertically integrate and grow through this. So you're going to see a slow ramp as more people get on board, and then it will start to get faster. So I'm obviously open to questions and anything that you guys have specifically to ask, being that on the grounds doing the work myself. Thank you.
All right. We good to go? All right. Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and members of the council. My name is Tim Miller. I'm the director of Oregon Business for Climate. But today I'm going to be speaking from my perspective as the former CEO of Clean Energy Works, which you've heard about a little bit, Clean Energy Works and Inhabit. So I'm going to first briefly describe Inhabit's development work as context for the second part of my comments, which will be in support of the Clean Energy Improvements in Single Family Homes program being presented today. So Clean Energy Works, which became Inhabit again, was first Clean Energy Works Portland in 2009 around the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. It was a Portland program. It was started just right across the hall from your regular chambers in City Hall. It started with, again, initially in a Portland pilot and eventually got $20 million of federal money and expanded statewide, and then got $10 million more from the state to continue those benefits across the state. We did about 5,000 homes in Oregon in the period, and we were doing deep energy retrofits, much like you're hearing about today. It's considered a whole home approach where you have insulation and air sealing and systems and all the work that you've heard about from these other experts already. Delivering energy benefits, but also health benefits, adding solar when it makes sense. Eventually, we began to do work in seismic and other improvements that may make sense someday with bolt-on programs, not this program. But in doing this work, we also worked with a lot of partners, and I'm sure those will show up in this work as well. We worked with Energy Trust, worked with dozens of trade ally partners, contractors like you heard about, community groups, equity advisors, creative financing partners like Craft 3. We're going to see a lot of that come around in this program too, where we're leveraging other funds from various sources. We created hundreds of good, equitable local jobs that could not be outsourced. They're all under a community benefits agreement, and they're similar to the ethics preserved here in PSEF. They ensured living wages and healthcare benefits for the women and men doing the work. I was involved for 8 years as a COO and then the CEO from 2011 to 2018. Then we wrapped up the organization and handed off all the program assets. And some of the staff actually transferred as well to Community Energy Project, which is a group that is doing work within PSEF today and keep carrying forward some of that work. So Clean Energy Works and Inhabit primarily serve folks who could afford to invest in their homes and could afford to take on some of that financing. But we also worked with some families, and Chris, as you heard before, was one of our lead contractors doing that work for folks who needed fully funded projects in their homes. You know, that's more like the bulk of the projects you're gonna see in this program. And I'm really pleased to see that this program design recognizes the additional investments that are needed in these homes where there's some deferred maintenance and other issues, and that 30% you heard about. This is where you also get those bigger returns from the project, where you get health benefits, energy efficiency benefits, affordability benefits, housing stability benefits, long-term asset value protection for the family. So, you know, there were a lot of successes, but also a fall off, like you heard about before. Hopefully doing this through PSEF will keep this program going for years and years into the future. So, you know, in doing a setting up a program like this, obviously there's a lot of work to design to handle the volume that this program will deliver, having the systems and structures in place, having the right checkpoints and balances of interests, somebody else to look at the project plans and scopes, somebody else to do the quality assurance, working with the contractor to be sure there's a third party view on things. But also in doing that big design, we learned and we made mistakes that you have to avoid too much bureaucracy. So it's a really tricky balance to get that right, to ensure the responsibilities are all in the right place. And I'm really happy to see that the PSEF team has the right experience on board to manage that balance. It takes experience to manage that balance. And they also are drawing on the wisdom of the rest of the community. We have a strong community of practice here in Portland and in the region with Energy Trust and NEA and our utilities and the Regional Technical Forum and national standards and tools. This program will draw on all those things, all that wisdom to deliver a great program. So on this program, to me, there are three things that I really like. One is it's got a really smart structure. This idea of a central administrator, a customer navigator, and a quality assurance provider being separate. In many, some programs, they're all together, but having them separate allows for other involvement by other community actors and a good check on everybody's systems. That's really smart. Also, in designing this program, the team got feedback from experts. I was in some of those meetings. They evolved the program a lot. So what you're seeing today is not the program you would have seen 18 months ago or a year ago. They evolved it in smart ways to make it a better program, more streamlined, but still preserving those checkpoints. Second point is I really like that they have this scaled, sensible levels of investments in scopes, depending on income levels. Very smart way to do it. It's going to allow them to allow the program to leverage additional funding sources, as we heard, Energy Trust, federal money, ODO money, all those other resources. And it provides for the deeper investment for those families that really need it. I also especially like the ability in this program where a family can say, yeah, I'd really like my navigator to come with me from day one all the way through, versus another customer might be able to say, actually, I got this. I've used contractors a lot. Just help me get connected and I'll move forward. So that's an interesting wrinkle to the program. Finally, my third point, the program design is really thorough without being micromanaging. The PSEF team thought through all the issues. If you take a look at it, you'll see a lot of stuff in there that some of it you won't even understand unless you've been really close to this industry, but it all makes sense, my perspective, without being overly prescriptive. They left room for the contractors who are gonna actually run the program to innovate and come up with good solutions. So I'm really pleased to support this program. I think it can carry forward a lot of work and a lot of efforts that have been done in the past, move that forward in a bigger way and in a long-term way for Portland. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
That concludes our invited testimony.
Very good. Commissioner Mapps, did you have a question?
Is there any public testimony I can hold off till then? I don't know if there is. I didn't check.
We have two people signed up.
Why don't we hear from them first, sure. Then we'll get to Commissioner Mapps. Thank you. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you. First, we have Indy Namku.
We might call you all back up, so just don't go too far. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thanks. All right. Am I good to go?
Yeah, good to go. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Mayor Wheeler, I'm Indy Namkun. I'm the Transportation Justice Coordinator for Verde, representing our organization today. Verde firmly supports PSEF's continued investments in climate action and resilience for our community, like this one proposed today in conjunction with the Climate Investment Plan Strategic Program 3. It is incredible to see the work that this council approved in the Climate Investment Plan 18 months ago-ish continue to progress on the heels of the proposal approved just 3 weeks ago for climate resiliency upgrades for Portland's public schools. As a transportation advocate, I will confess that you are almost certain to see me back here with balloons to cheer on the e-bike program's kickoff later this summer, but today we are here to talk about energy-efficient homes. This investment will expand PSEF's reach to single-family homes while continuing to serve over 500 low-income renters. Investing in these 3,100 homes in total will not only lower carbon emissions from heating, cooling, and power, it will also make many of these homes safer, healthier, and more livable for people in our community who have been dealing with the consequences of older infrastructure and struggling with affordability of their energy bills. Instead of suffering in freezing or overheated homes or worrying how they'll make it through the next utility rate hike, they'll be able to live comfortably. On top of that, we're excited that these investments will make homes more resilient for our community members in severe weather events, ensuring more people can remain safely in their homes during extreme heat or cold rather than disrupt their lives or their work with evacuation to a cooling or warming shelter. This investment will also improve our green workforce by training up to 400 workers on green building and equipment installation, preparing them for good, stable careers in the green economy. We're here to uplift this program today because we've seen what investments like this have done for our neighbors in Cali. Verde Builds, our social enterprise program, installs heat pumps, portable cooling units, and other home energy upgrades, as well as developing community solar installations in low-income communities and communities of color. We focus on creating more energy-efficient homes because we see it as a crucial step in fostering a healthy environment, but also community empowerment and economic stability, excuse me. For Cali neighborhood residents. But we can't be anywhere. Nobody can, though I think we're all trying. And PSF is integral to making sure every Portland neighborhood can access similar investments, environmental improvements that are a priority for their residents, that reduce carbon output while lessening the threat of displacement and people of color from our city at the same time. Portlanders want solutions like this. I saw how many of us were at the PSF work session on Tuesday. We must ensure that the city is not only able to mitigate the worst impacts of climate change, but to invest in solutions that help all of us thrive in the long term. We support PSF and we must keep it going for now and into the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we have Babs Vanelli. Babs was to join online, but has not joined in. Like Babs is not here. So that concludes.
Next person. Then.
That concludes testimony.
All right. Very good. Commissioner Mapps, I think you were up.
Oh, thank you. Number one, I want to thank staff for the presentation, and I want to thank our invited guests for their testimony, too. I just have a couple of backgroundy.
Do we have enough room for our invited guests?
Sure, bring everyone
the whole
up.
Panel can be here, and that way, if anybody has something to chime in on, more is the merrier.
I think my initial questions are going to be largely targeted towards city staff. Although anyone who has insights, I'd welcome to jump in. I'll throw it to Sam, and Sam can kick it over to someone else if appropriate. So this council has adopted goals for reducing carbon emissions in a number of different spaces, transportation, as we just heard about, housing, so on and so forth. And even within housing, we have multifamily and single family. So it's my understanding that today we're talking about focusing in on reducing carbon emissions in the single family space. Do we have a sense of how much we hope to reduce carbon emissions by in the single family home space over the next 5 years?
So in this program, it is going to be that, and it is a range, but it's 120 to 150,000 metric tons. Those are lifetime emissions based on the modeled measures that we would be installing in this program. So for this particular program, that'd be the range.
So that's what this program does. But I think council's also adopted a larger strategic plan where we're trying to reduce carbons by, I think it's 250.
Getting us to net zero 2050, correct.
Right. So, here's my instead of dancing around, I think if I'm understanding the planning documents that we put together, our goal is to reduce, and it's hard for me to know, but I think we're trying to, if things have gone well since 2017, I think right now we're trying to reduce carbon emissions in the single family home space over the next 5 years by about another 250,000 metric tons or something like that. And this program today gets us, we'll cut that, we'll take care of a significant hunk of that problem, 120,000 to 150,000 metric tons. I guess I have two questions. One is, where did we get that 120 to 150? Because given the goals that we've set, it seems like we should be shooting for that 250. And if, since we're not shooting towards the 250, what's our plan to fill, to backfill that extra 100,000 metric tons? Or
I thank you, Mayor Wheeler, Commissioner. I think I get the question. This program, as part of, I think, even what Jason was sharing, there's going to be a scale up. We know that as our longer term goals, this program is going to do 600 homes a year. We know that we need to get closer to that 1,500, 2,000 homes a year as a community. And that involves not just us as a program, but the contracting community, the private investments community members make in terms of leveraging IRA, other resources. So this was what we felt was a reasonable start at ultimately what, and then when we come back to you all for the next 5-year CIP, we know those targets will be higher and we're gonna have to do some more catch up on the back end, but we'll have the underlying infrastructure. I think the other pieces is we're actively working with Energy Trust, the Department of Energy, at State Department of Energy, and tracking the various HERA, the various programs from the Inflation Reduction Act, which will do their part as well. So I think balancing, I don't know that we were ever explicit that this would do all of the single family homework, but we know it'll take a good chunk, particularly of our households that'll be harder pressed to be able to make those investments.
Okay, thank you for that. So how did we, where does the estimate for the 120 to 150 metric tons over the next 5 years, where did that, how did you reach that number?
Mayor Wheeler, Commissioner, Commissioner Mapps, what we did is, as part of this, as you see, we have a range of different investment levels. And for each of those investment levels, we projected out and modeled what were going to be the expected emissions or measures that we would be implementing. So on the more moderate income households, 120, 150% area median income, we expect that there's a $15,000 contribution from the city, $15,000 match from those entities. And as part of that, we know that you're going to be able to tap a few different measures, HVAC replacement, heat pump water heater, insulation. And we modeled, basically, we took the average profile of a single family home within the city. I don't know what the average vintage was, but 19 something, and said, okay, based on that, what is that going to look like? And that's why it reflects a general range in that we know that there's going to be variability, but it is a modeled figure. And on the other side of that, we'll obviously be tracking what measures did we actually install, what are the actual projected emissions reductions on that.
Okay, I'll pause here and see if my colleagues have any other questions.
Yeah, just put my hand up. Sure. First of all, thank you. Thank you, Sam. And congratulations on your new title, Eric, and hello, expert panel. I think what I want to do is go through three things. We hear a lot about shovel ready. It's a great term. And we know there's 3,100 homes that are ready for this. What I couldn't get out of the presentation is how do we find them and are they clearly identified yet? And if not, all good. I just want to hear what the methodology is to locate those 3,100.
That's going to be part of the program. The program administrator's role will be marketing and outreach. Obviously, there will be those customer navigators as well, which will be responsible for also doing some of that marketing and outreach. We will not have any shortage of homes that we'll be able to attract with this program, given both the incentive level and given just the volume of need. So it is going to be about still appropriately marketing the program, but that is going to be one of the services that this central administrator role will be responsible for implementing.
So we know that's our goal and that's fine, but today we haven't met yet to figure out how to locate those 3,100.
It's today I'm looking to the group here. Chris, maybe I'll tap you as my landline.
Makes sense.
Here.
I'm not trying to do a gotcha moment. I'm just trying to figure out if we really are shovel ready. Yeah.
No, we don't have them identified per se, but we definitely have a lot of connections that we've made in the community. And so we are thinking through, what that outreach is going to look like. But let's take, for example, Meals on Wheels. We connect with them. They've got connections with many, many people throughout the city. So that's one example of one avenue we could look at. But we've also have got many, many partners that are in the community that will bring
folks. So to get to the 3,100, we'll rely on our partners who have relationships with households out there.
Oh no, it'll be a multifaceted approach. Okay, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And then when you had the goals up, maybe it was, I wasn't looking at it right. It was one of the slides and it had percentage with nothing next to the percentage. So I could figure out what the goals were.
So what we have is we have overall program level goals. And then that slide, which I'm happy to share that again here. Let me go ahead through it and pull up the slide.
It went really quick.
I saw you looking at that particular slide for a moment. So I think this is a slide you're talking about. This is the target benefit, you know, the target numbers as we break down to the goals. There'll be about 500 households we're seeking to do retrofits on that are going to be, that's at the bottom of the chart, that are where we're providing up to $15,000 investments for high impact energy efficiency measures. 600 households for that sort of next lower tier house homeowners between 81 to 100% area median income provided up to $30,000 investment for high impact measures. And then
that's
we
really clear.
Move up the way.
Yeah, that's, but there was one that said goal measurements, 31 single homes. Then it said percentage average energy usage reduction.
The percentage of savings for the households in utility bill savings.
There, is that what you're looking for? Ding, ding. Yeah.
There we go. I think we've got the slide up right now. And so this is going back to Commissioner Mapp's point earlier. This is based on those measures that we just listed up, those number of households. And essentially, if we're retrofitting that tune to that level of investment, high impact measures, these are the overall emissions goals, reduction goals we expect to achieve. So 120,000 metric tons of, oh, you're looking at the average reduction percentages.
That's all I'm trying to.
Apologies, yeah. Commissioner Ryan. I'm going to see if we do have those details. And I know Katie Lister is on the line if we want to speak to those percentages are going to be different for each of the segments. But I'm going to see, Katie, if you want to chime in on the specific percentages. If you have
those. That's what I was asking about. I couldn't figure out what that meant.
Katie's waiting. Yeah. Hi, good afternoon. Katie Lister, Deputy Program Manager for the PSEF program. So in this context, those percentages they're the measures that help us understand what our actual that help us get to the goal of reduced greenhouse gas emissions reduction. So for example, we know that if we have reduced from baseline consumption of electricity by 20%, then measuring that for each household gets us, is an input that we use to be able to calculate if we're close to our goal, which is really reducing greenhouse gas emissions. I can share that the assumptions that are sort of underlying our projected greenhouse gas emissions are around 15 to 20% overall energy usage reduction for the high impact, lower dollar value investment per household for that part of the table. And then for the whole home energy efficiency retrofits, we're sort of looking more in the 30 to 35% overall energy usage reduction. And that's a mix of electricity and gas, depending on what measures are implemented.
So it is, Commissioner Ryan, it's variable. Those percentage reduction targets are variable depending on the category that the target category.
All right. Yeah. Thanks. And then workforce, I think it was this week, Tuesday, we had the work session. And for me, this is our green economy stimulus plan. And so that's probably why I'm trying to figure out, all right, this is exciting. How long is it going to take? Because we know there's 3,100 homes out there there's more than that. So I'm just trying to get to when the action will start to take place. And how exciting it is as a workforce issue to have a big project so that some people can go from pre-apprentice all the way to journey. That's always what I'm usually my one note that I try to remain on message about these types of investments. And I just want to know more about that.
Yeah, we're acutely aware. And actually, this is one of the places where we've done active engagement with a range of groups, including the Professional Business Development Group. We've got them on standby. As we come back, we expect once we award the contract, there's going to be a program development phase that'll take a good chunk of time, a few months before we start having projects for workers. So we'll come back to you all on the other side of this RFP, fingers crossed, procurement gods. 6 months or so from now, we'll come back, we'll award the contract, we'll then execute the contract, and then a few months in the program development phase, and then the work will begin. And that's at the point where we actually do our active reach out to contractors, just so that we're not priming them too early without the opportunities right there. So we are sensitive to, we work with the organization so they know this is coming down the pipeline, but we were sensitive to engaging contractors until we have the actual job opportunities there.
We have them.
We will have them with this program, correct?
I hope that we, just a comment, that we don't hold on to this too tightly and that we really let in those that can tell us where the homes are, those that can tell us where the workforce is. And I don't think we have that knowledge in the same way that we have it out in the community. So I just hope that this doesn't stay stuck too long. Trying to get us out of the plan to plan to plan. I think we have a plan. Let's go.
Absolutely, Commissioner. This has been an incredibly well thought out plan. And I think, as the commenter said, we've been intentionally really cognizant of the fact that this is intended to be a scaled program. Scale is absolutely the objective here. And it's been clear from day one that this is about scale and delivery and speed of that delivery.
Commissioner Mapps, do you have some?
Thanks.
I'll pause. Not at the moment, unless we're about to close out.
Great. I think we're getting to that point. So if you have something else, I think we're ready to move this on the second reading.
I think I'm fine. I appreciate the dialogue with everyone today. Very supportive of the program. I'll tell you, my engagement right here at this moment with this program is really about making sure that we manage this and model this so that we're actually achieving our climate change goals. And I'll tell you, according to my back of the envelope math, I think right now the proposal on the table has us paying roughly about $900 to remove a metric ton of carbon in the air. That doesn't pencil out for where we want to go in 5 years. I think it might pencil out at $599 per metric ton. So, I think the mix of programs that one of the things I'm trying to figure out is if we optimize the mix of programs, if we'd actually be able to reach our 5-year carbon reduction goals. And I can't, given the information I have in front of me right now, I can't quite do that algebra. And I think you're kind of saying we're not going to get there, but certainly the public holds us accountable for reaching our carbon reduction goals. So as a manager, I kind of have to try to manage and solve for that problem.
Thank you, Commissioner. It's a worthwhile conversation that we're happy to follow up, particularly as we come back to this and bring this to you all on the other side.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Ryan.
Commissioner Rubio, as you think about this and how it connects to the reform work we've been doing with permitting, and knowing that usually something like this, we could all have some heartache about how hard it is to navigate our permitting system, and we'll be bringing in some people who might be born to it. And so I'll pause there. This is an exciting opportunity because we unfortunately don't have a lot of permitting going on at the moment. So how can we marry these two? So this is almost like a opportunity to really see our integrated SPA take off and get to some proof points on improvements for how we do permitting with this program.
I think it's a great idea, and it's something that we can talk to about how to integrate that productively.
Just had to wax on about that for a minute. Thank you all.
Great, thank you. This is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. Thank you.
Sorry, excuse me, Mayor. It looks like Babs, our testifier who wasn't able to join us, has joined in.
All right. Go ahead.
Babs Finelli. Babs, are you online?
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Oh, thank you. Well, Babs Finelli here. Technically challenged, almost 76-year-old. Yes, baby boomer. And I'm sorry that I wasn't zoomed in correctly.
Not a problem. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. I've testified before you previously. Thank you. I've lived in Portland my entire life, and I love my city of roses. I am here today because I am passionate about environmental justice and climate change. I support PSEF 110%. Thank you for supporting their first proposal on clean energy schools. After listening to all the testimony from the panelists, I took screenshots of the slides so I can review them. I'm even more in favor of moving forward with this plan. As you know, there are thousands of us in numerous environmental groups throughout the city. And I know you have heard from us via email, public comment, written testimony. And we encourage you to not let us down, to move forward with what PSEF is proposing. I'm a little nervous because I messed up, but I'll just end by asking you all to imagine for a moment the planet that you want to pass on to your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren, and beyond. Your support of PSEF for a clean energy Portland will become the legacy that you all pass on to future generations. Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Commissioner Ryan, did you have your hand up? All right, good. So this is ranks and expanding PPB's capacity as quickly as we can. Our nationwide recruiting of new officers is showing very positive results with over 100 new officers in training as we speak. We successfully advocated for expansion of the State Academy to clear a growing backlog and allow our new hires to start their extensive training as quickly as possible. Council approved lateral hiring bonuses for a time and successfully hired certified candidates who could hit the ground running. And for the first time in years, our hiring rate began to outpace our rate of separations with nearly 200 sworn officers hired in the last 2 years. However, we've been bracing for retirements and working to assess and look for new pathways to retain our experienced workforce while at the same time continuing to recruit new hires. That's the aim of the letter of agreement that's before us here today. I'm pleased to have Chief Bob Day and Chief Deputy City Attorney Heidi Brown both here to tell us about this agreement. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners. I will start and then I'll turn it over to Chief Day, if that's all right. Just legally, I'll briefly explain what this does. Currently in the collective bargaining agreement with the Portland Police Association, we have provisions for the rehiring of retired or retiring officers. And there's two ways we can do it. And this would provide a third option for the chief. Currently, we have one program that lasts 6 years, and that's only if they come back as an officer. We have a second program that lasts 2 years where they can retain the rank they were in. And what this will do will give a third option where the chief can bring somebody back at his discretion for a 1 year period. And then if the chief feels it's appropriate and the employee wants to continue for another year, they can do that. And they can extend it for one additional year. All of these 1 year extensions for a total of 3 year period are at the discretion of the chief and of course of the employee as well. So this just gives a little more flexibility to the chief to get us through this period of time with retirements coming up. And I'll let the chief talk about the impacts of that. And happy to answer questions if you have any.
Thanks, Heidi.
Thanks, Heidi. Good afternoon, Council. Bob Day, Chief of Police, City of Portland. And just want to say, first of all, just thanks for the support and encouragement each of you have demonstrated, both in word and deed, along the lines of the budget, as well as just your personal encouragement to me and to the police bureau. It is noticed, it's appreciated. I came out of the Portland building this afternoon around the lunch hour, stood on the street corner and said hi to a businesswoman standing next to me. And she looked and she said, "You're the chief of police." I said, "Yeah, well, I'm also just Bob." And we talked and she said, "I just have one question. Are you getting the support that you need?" And it was really a grateful, prideful moment to be saying absolutely, that council's unified in their advocacy and belief in what we're doing, and grateful for the mayor's confidence in me once again to stand in this position for this time. It's not probably a secret, but staffing for law enforcement, certainly in the city of Portland, continues to be a challenge, but you have all made it a priority. I'm grateful for that. And this really program, as Heidi mentioned, is just an extension of what already exists, but I've made the decision and the recommendation to go to this model for a couple different reasons. One, it gives me a little bit more latitude, a little bit more flexibility. I do think that we are increasing our numbers of hiring. We are having success. I'm hopeful that in 2025, we will start to see a leveling out and maybe even a growth in retaining our officers. The number of officers leaving has decreased than we've seen in the previous couple of years. So officers are sticking around longer. That's encouraging. And I don't want to hinder that growth and development, both for new members as well as for, you know, people that want to promote and have aspirations for organizational growth and development. So this 1 year window really gets us into 25, where then we can kind of assess. And then, as I said, it gives another option for another year and then another option for another year. But that's all at the discretion of the chief. And we have a very robust review process that starts with the member making a request, and it goes through their chain of command. We do a thorough review of their internal affairs history, work performance review, all of that. And I've made it clear that every single supervisor has to give me their recommendation in writing to be able to communicate that to the member. But ultimately, the decision is mine. And I'm committed to making sure that those that we do back into the extend will definitely be employees that would honor the work of the police bureau and that members of the community and you all can be proud of based upon their prior performance. And I'm grateful for that discretion. So this is just an opportunity I see to kind of get us through into next year, and then we'll evaluate. We have about 14 people that have declared they want to retire in June. Not all of them are eligible for this program based on rank. And then we know we're going to have some more retirements in the fall. So we'll kind of evaluate as we go. I don't intend to use this to fill up everything. There, first of all, there's plenty of vacancies, but I am going to be very strategic and very intentional about those that we grant this opportunity to, because I want to continue to be able to, you know, recruit successfully and message to the community and to, you know, people coming into the profession that there's still opportunity. So appreciate your support.
Thank you. Great. And so could I just make sure I understand? So we have basically two more retirement cliffs, if you will, here. And then did I hear you correctly the other day? We've got a couple of years then of stability after that as far as retirements go.
Yeah. So 2026 will be the next, you know, kind of larger opportunity for retirement, I think. That's why I'm predicting, and it's, you know, really is just a prediction, but I'm predicting that this year will kind of level out. I don't think we're going to see much. I think our hiring will be on pace with our retirement. These will help offset that a little bit. But then in 25, I think we're going to have a chance to really make up ground. So we currently have 13 members that are in the former retire rehire program. So since 2020, we've had roughly about 30 folks apply to be a part of it. And some signed up and were accepted and then have separated from the Bureau on their own. But we have about 13 right now, and they're in various stages because they, as Heidi mentioned, under the former agreement, they could do 6 years or whatever. So some that were in the 6 year window are coming up on that fourth and fifth year, but the majority will be, you know, timing out here in the next year or so.
Great. Thank you. Any questions, colleagues? Do we have public testimony?
We do, one person.
All right.
Dan Handelman.
Hi, Dan. You're muted, Dan.
Good afternoon. Mayor Wheeler and council members. I'm Dan Handelman. I use he, him pronouns. I'm with the group Portland Cop Watch. And our group has testified before about the pitfalls of their retire rehire program. There have been at least two incidents where employees were rehired and then behaved in ways that, quote, unduly affected the Bureau operations or unduly eroded public trust, as it says in the policy on professional conduct. One was Sergeant Greg Lewis, who made a violent racist remark shortly after Quantas Hayes was shot in 2017, whose back pay the council had to pay, even though he was terminated after being rehired. This new addition to the agreement seems to be crafted to expand the pool of who can be rehired and allow them to work three extra years on a year-to-year basis instead of just two or six. Ms. Brown explained it well, but it's still very confusing to the layperson. What we do not see in the existing agreement is language that lays out the criteria for the chief to use when deciding whether someone is a good candidate for retire rehire. Police Review Board reports such as those from August 2020 and March 2021 reference officers who retire before they can have discipline imposed on them. It would be great to add a clause that says officers who had findings of misconduct, belittling or harming community members or were retired while under investigation or after findings due to administrative investigations will not be considered for rehire program. The chief may create other criteria as they deem appropriate. I did hear Chief Day's assurance there will be a review of each officer as they apply, but I don't see that anywhere written down. One of our main complaints about this program, which should resonate with people who think the city is misspending their scant funds, is that it allows officers to retire and collect their pensions and then go back to work doing the same job for the same pay. This is also known as double dipping. It's as if you're paying for two officers but only getting one. According to the PPB's website, there are over 100 officers currently in training who are still not out in the streets. This desperate effort to pull officers back in just when they thought they were out feels like payola and does not seem fiscally responsible. The last time this policy came before you, just 2 years ago, it was to make an exception for three officers who retired, but had let the time frame lapse so long they could not have otherwise rejoined the Bureau. This time, the urgency seems to be that a lot of officers are taking advantage of a quirk in our society's calendars to retire when a six-month period lasts 27 weeks instead of 26. For whatever reason, there are two such periods this year, ending in June and November. Maybe a better option to avoid these mass retirements would be to fix that issue. And while I have a few extra seconds, I just want looking forward to seeing the new code about the oversight system, and we'll repeat what I said in court yesterday, that we need to be assured the community input will be seriously considered when that comes to council. And we'll talk more about that next week, I'm sure. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Dan. That completes public
testimony. That completes testimony.
All right. There's an emergency ordinance. Please call the roll.
Ryan.
Thanks for being here today. Heidi, good to see you. Hi, bye-bye.
Gonzalez.
I'm glad to see this agreement come before us today. As the city addresses real concerns around public safety, no investment is more important than an experienced law enforcement professional. We've seen real progress in recent years in rebuilding our pipeline, but concerns around attrition is substantial in the police department. And intelligent investments such as this one that will lessen the rate of retirement, I think, is the net good. I want to thank Chief Day, Chief Deputy Attorney Heidi Brown, and PPA President Aaron Schmaltz for coming to the table and doing what is best for the city. I also want to be crystal clear. I have strong objections to giving extreme groups like Cop Watch the right to dictate when the police chief chooses to hire retirees. I will also like to say that with this ordinance today, I hope we can adequately address the retirement that PPB sees on the horizon. With that, I gladly vote aye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Maps.
I want to thank everyone for today's presentation. Really glad to see this program move forward. I vote aye.
Rubio.
Thank Chief and Heidi for all your great work on this. It's really important.
Wheeler.
Yeah, well, thanks again, both of you, for your presentation. Chief, you're probably getting fairly tired of seeing me. This is multiple times over multiple days, but you haven't aged a bit. That's good news. Yeah. Thank you also for the strong work PPB is doing to recruit high quality candidates. As you know, I try to attend each and every one of the hiring ceremonies, and I'm continually impressed by the caliber as well as the diversity of the individuals who are choosing to work at the Portland Police Bureau. It frankly gives me a lot of optimism about the future of the Bureau. Likewise, I want to thank the many good men and women who are nearing the end of their careers with the Bureau. Your service is greatly appreciated, regardless
of whether or not you choose to return as part of this program. Even so, I hope you stay for just a little bit longer, and this program might help us do that. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor, Council.
And our third item. I have a question. My understanding is going to be withdrawn. Do we actually have to wait till 3:45 to withdraw it?
Oh God.
Please tell me no.
It's withdrawn.
Good. Okay. Do we need to read it?
Yes.
All right. Can you please read 394 resolution?
Direct Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to develop land use approaches to address the impact of warehouse and distribution facilities on residential neighborhoods and schools.
Mayor, I'm pulling this back to my office.
Wonderful. Thank you. With that, then, we're adjourned. Thanks, everybody.